Last week, you dropped a bomb on me, which is content team. You have a content team. What's that all about?
So you get to the point where it's like, hang on, this is starting to look a bit like it used to, where I was working too many hours of the day. And that's kind of the flexibility was the holy grail I was after in the first place. So, you know, you get traction and it makes sense to keep it. And you have to keep leveling up and innovating and so on, but you need a team around to do that. So, for instance, every week is going out probably about now, I have a newsletter that goes out to my email list. And, you know, I can write them, but then something else suffers. So I have a wonderful team. The content head is a lady called Mona Nairi. And, you know, it's little things. It's like making sure that posts go up on time on YouTube or on Instagram. And before I had that, I was dropping the ball and I had to make calls on, do you know which one's going to be most important? I'll just do LinkedIn because I'm getting traction there. Instagram's going to have to go a fourth day without a post. And you think, how can you not post? Because the game isn't just posting for the sake of it. It's a calculated, intentional piece of content. And you're asking yourself, is this going to keep value? And, you know, when you post the content, you need to babysit it. You know, you don't just post and walk off. You have to engage with the community, because far more important than content is the community itself and how you work with those connections. So it's all possible because there's a content team around me that helps in many different ways. And that goes as far as the events as well. And Anna Sericcio here in London is like, she's the reason why that events world keeps turning. Not least because she's my sounding board. She's my kind of, she's so like me in the way we think. And whilst so many people in my group or my, you know, you're probably the same, you have a community of friends and close allies, they're all well-meaning, but what you need is someone's going to give it to you straight and go, no, don't do that, that's silly. Or like, you know, or this is, they get it from, rather than being awe-inspired, they're being practical, and having people around you like that is huge.
There are a couple of things that really resonated with me. First off is that you talk, and I know this from the way you engage with people, it's very personal. It's very first name basis. It's, there are no barriers to engaging with you. The gatekeeping is minimal, if anything. I mean, you'll ask for an email address on the website, but that's because you provide so much value and all that. When you were talking about something would drop or a ball would drop because you didn't do it, all of a sudden something popped in my head and it's like, oh yeah, when you make a date with someone and you don't keep it, what happens? They give you a break the first time. The second time, it's kind of annoying. The third time is forget it.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking about is you make a date with people like 8 a.m. on Monday. Hop on Facebook and there's Richard.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden you're gone a week, I might wonder, oh, well, maybe he's on vacation and he forgot to tell us.
Yeah.
2 weeks, what's going on? 3 weeks. I'm not wasting my time anymore. You don't want to break those dates because it is a personal commitment.
Because here's the thing. If you map back from the outcome of people talking about you, perhaps even buying your stuff and generally being in orbit around you, then to get there, you need that familiarity and you need to show up for people. And you know, sure, the world keeps turning if you don't show up. And you can get away with it to a degree, as you rightly said. But the reality is, if you can provide value and help people, then you should put out and you should work to and make sure that that delivery on to that connection is achieved. So that's why the customers, I'm the Zappos style, I'm the customer service focus, and I outsource the, you know, the content delivery and even some of the creation. I was literally engaged with someone earlier today about an infographic. It was like, well, what's your pricing, and come up with something, because that's something I won't be able to do. But the one thing I won't allow is the thing that I always feel I'm most accountable to, which is other people. Not because it matters to me that I'm accepted, I'm not that needy, but it does matter to me that if someone has a expectation that that's delivered on. And that's how I get things done as well, you know. That's why I'm always cool with doing the 1 o'clock show, because I know that they'll always be there. And so I, you know, kind of need to show up for them. If it was, no one's going to watch Richard, but we'll pay you £1,000 for it, I wouldn't bother, because they're like, money doesn't ever seem to do that for me. When it's people, you just don't want to let them down. Do you know what I mean? It's like that, knowing what makes you accountable matters.
Oh my God, you're preaching to the choir here, because the worst thing you can do is overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah.
And even worse than that is take a personal relationship for granted. I'm a forgiveness, not permission guy. Go ahead and do it and ask for permission later. But that's slightly different. When you're making a commitment to someone, honor that commitment. Yeah. I want to point out something you just said that I really like too. I listened to your Q&A today,
yeah,
and you said something that almost made my head explode in joy. And that good. Was, I don't do this for money. I do it for flexibility. And I'm like, hallelujah. Because, well, here's the reality is you can't lean up against a Lamborghini with stacks of flexibility. And I think that,
you're right. You know,
but that's what people, I think, who are balanced, who are authentic to themselves actually want. It's like, I want the flexibility to not have to put in 60 hours a week so that I can go to my kid's football game on the weekend, or I can go to the band concert.
It's joke, right? It's that all of the wannabes that chase being a millionaire have as their idols the Reid Hoffmans, the Gary Vaynerchuks, the Elon Musks, and the Jeff Bezos people. And not one single, I read so many biographies. Even Warren Buffett never chased money. I'll say again, Warren Buffett never chased money. The amount of money he made was about keeping score. He did something he loved, which was the game of investing. That's, he wasn't like, I'm going to be a millionaire, or the 1980s equivalent of it, or whenever he was kind of really building. The reality is that if you chase the money, you it just doesn't work. And if it does work, then that's very rare. And for people who don't actually chase the money, you know, Tim Ferriss, people take the wrong part of his book. You've probably read it and you probably agree with me. If you read that book properly, this is a guy really intelligent, went to Princeton, and then he worked his face off. And that book is about streamlining, automating, and outsourcing so that ultimately you can arrive at a point when you do perhaps dip into your business 4 hours a week. For instance, my Taekwondo academies took all my time to start with. Then they were just the hours a week when I showed up to teach. So they were like a 6 hour work week. But it doesn't just happen like that, does it? And absolutely, the holy grail is flexibility. Because it's, you know, it's funny, because everyone says on a Monday morning, oh, Richard, you must be like burst out of the chocks. You must be straight into working and so on. I'm like, no, my thing is on a Monday morning, I get up with my girls. We have breakfast together. Then I take them to school and nursery, because it's about designing things. And if I need to pivot, you know, and do something, childcare or family or whatever, that's possible. And that's not showing off. That's just being intelligent about what your outcome needs to be. The irony of it all is that, of course, you end up, by doing things you love, you end up leaning into it so much, to quote Sheryl Sandberg, and you end up in a great place where you actually make more money than you ever did anyway, because that's always going to be a byproduct of something you enjoy doing.
Well, let me talk to you as a dad of slightly older girls for a second. My girls are in high school and going to college and all that stuff. The time you're in now with your daughters, especially given the fact that one of them is going to nursery school.
Yeah.
Those days you cannot get back until, if you're blessed, they have children and then you have grandchildren. But even then, it's not the same.
No.
And let me tell you, I thought I knew what life was, and then I had children and then went, oh,
yes,
this is what life's about. So yes, I'm a very proud dad of my daughters, and I would mention their names, except I protect them even online and in podcasts. So they aren't hard to find, but cherish these days, because let me tell you, my girls think I'm the dumbest thing that walks the face of the earth right now.
I know. I'm in that age. You know what? I'm at that age where I'm an absolute rock star. I'll walk in the room. They're like, Daddy's here. I'm like, yeah, I am. Knowing full well that in 8 years, they're like, they're so embarrassing.
Just oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's when you'll turn. That's when you'll turn to bad dad jokes just to get any reaction out of them.
I know. I can totally see that happening.
Yeah.
Be all right. And, you know, it's very, let's be honest, it's seriously seductive. The job I do and engaging with these great people and helping businesses, I would do it all the time if I was on my own. But, and that's why I'm not flying, you know, I flitted over to New York for 57 hours in January for that event. I'm going to Barcelona for under 24 hours in April. But I'm not, everyone's like, oh, cool, you're going to Toronto and then you're going to Melbourne. I'm like, no, because actually if I was on my own and 20, I might do that. But, you know, those days are passed by choice because I'm with children, I have children, and the weekends are very automated so that I can spend basically 98% of the time with family and presently as well, you know, not on a phone physically in the room. It matters. It really does. And I had a snippet, it was less than a year of overlap where I was doing the corporate job and not seeing my daughter. And the thing is, even if you do have a weekend, you're exhausted and not quite there. And I just, you know, I'm glad I had that perspective of my older self, you know, and tried and acted on it, which was a big risk, but it was worth doing.
Well, one of the key tenets of nonfiction branding, the philosophy that I espouse oh so often on all my channels and stuff like that, especially in Nonfiction Brandversity, the free Facebook group that you can join simply by asking, is to know who you are so you can be it. You know, I like to say that you could take the assembled wisdom of all the self-help books ever written, distill it down, and it all comes down to that phrase. If you know who you are and you are it, you will be happier, healthier, et cetera, et cetera.
You're so right. And it's interesting, isn't it, that you... so often when we're younger, it's almost like every year you get better at it. But when we're younger, we do things we feel other people will be impressed with to then in turn have external validation. It's interesting that because I think we do it a lot. And of course I did, and we all did when I was younger. But I do think that I was never one to really... It wasn't that I didn't want to conform for the sake of it, but I did want to do things that were very me. And people have asked me about, I've been on the podcast before when someone asked me about this, and there's definitely a defining moment on this. And it was when I was 13. And I remember I was at school, it was lunch, it was secondary school, or high school as you call it. It was lunchtime and it was summer. And I remember looking out the window, and I explained why I was looking out the window. And I'm looking out onto the playing field and everyone was playing football. And by everyone, I was like most of my class. So I remember thinking like, I know I should be out there, but where I was actually the computer lab, because at age 13, I was programming my first operating system and I was building computers out of bits of junk because that's what I wanted to do. And I remember knowing, like, I was like, this is just like, you're not going to be very popular doing this, but I'm like, but I want to be here. And I remember just not caring that much. And that kind of attitude is a little bit surly at times, but I'm like, and the nice thing now is that when you're a grown up, you realize it really doesn't matter and you can really indulge heavily in the stuff that you enjoy being, you know, the person you want to be, you know what I mean? So that's why you've got four guitars on the wall. You see what I mean?
Well, exactly. In my head, I'm really good, but maybe not so much.
I was too, and I only played for like a year, so I must have been terrible.
Yeah. I love the fact that you can point to the very date, time, and hour where wisdom sprang forth from your forehead, like, well, who was it? Athena coming out of...
I feel that was a really important moment. And ever since then, I've had this hang up about the word should. And it's interesting because my wife and I actually met at high school, although we only got together in later life. And she was a lawyer in London and so tremendously well-trained and all that kind of thing. Very, very lawyery minded. And it was 2 years ago. So my youngest was only a year and a half, almost two then. And I remember we were talking about what would happen after, you know, both children go to school. And she said, well, I feel I should be a lawyer again. I was like, but do you want to? And she was like, well, I know, but she was very much like, but this is the world we're in. This is, you know, I should, and that's that. And we both know that's the conditioning of 25, 30 years of our parents, love them, but baby boomers saying this is what you should be doing because that's the world they may have been in. I said, well, what is it you would want to do? And said, well, actually, I really love decorating cakes. So right now, downstairs, in a new kitchen built for her last year and a half ago, she runs her own cake decorating business. And I'm really thrilled that she went, do you know what? Actually, that means I get to spend more time at home and we don't have our child in care as much. It means we get to, hey, when they go to nursery and school, we have coffee together. And you know, I'm at home and today she's doing a cake and then she's doing a bit of painting later on. And I think that this isn't showing off. This is just remembering that what you should do and what actually you need to do or want to do are sometimes different things.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus. And that to me is the essence of what people are calling authenticity, to really know what you are, who you are, what you're about. And I just want to write a bumper sticker based on everything you just said. Okay. Don't live today's life by yesterday's rules, because that's what your wife was trying to do. It's like, well, I got a degree, I passed the bar or whatever you have to do in the UK. Those are sunk costs and they were not inconsequential either.
No.
She had to spend thousands of hours undoubtedly. But guess what? Those are yesterday's hours, not today's or the future's hours.
This is a fascinating time. I'm saying it whilst we're in it, but I think it's fascinating because we are now in a world where you can, as we've discussed already, you can make a living in a way that doesn't feel like to those who maybe have made a living in a different way in the past, but like it's legitimate or correct. And I remember when I first decided to not just be a consultant, but do it, but work with some people online as well, I started getting like the whole, okay, so when are you going to go back and get a proper job? And a lot of people are saying it's not real. And it's like a job doesn't need to look the same as it used to. And the funny thing is that actually the worlds are, the lines are blurring. My sister works in, she lives in San Francisco, works for a tech business out there. And it's kind of similar. You know, there's the flexibility there. There's all of these, you know, policies like take the holiday you need. We're not going to treat you like a child where you must be in the office kind of thing, because we're all growing up a bit as time moves on. And I think that I'm really excited about what my daughter's workplace, let alone work itself, will look like, because we're doing jobs, you know, that never used to exist. There was never the case that this time of day on a Monday with two people like this that typically should be in a suit would be doing a podcast together. But there's practical application. It feeds into our businesses. It's quite an interesting world.
Well, and I also want to point out that two people like you and me who are of our age or experience, we're talking to each other via the fantasy video phone of the Jetsons that was always promised. And all of a sudden it was there and no one ever pointed out that, oh my God, I can go global 24/7 for free. Because now this Zoom room, I don't pay for this Zoom subscription. Sorry, I will one day, but I don't now.
But that's so fascinating. And I think that's why we talk about like land grabbing, as they call it, with LinkedIn and things like that. You're like, you never know how it will change in the future or what it'll be like. But now's certainly a time to go at it. It's hard for those above us, you know, who came before us, because they're like, this doesn't compute. and I was raised by two teachers, and it was a very linear upbringing. It was, you will go to university. There's no question about it. You are going, and then you'll get a job. It should be in London, and you really should be wearing a suit. What the job is doesn't matter. Ideally, it's lawyer, accountant, something like that. But it was like, it's a suit. And then it's mortgage, pension, house, all that kind of stuff.
Death. Don't forget death at the end of it.
Oh, death, of course. But not until you put your children to university and like, doesn't he? And it's interesting because I was very much, as I said at the start on the previous episode, it was very much, I wanted to be an academic. And that was very much my mother speaking through me to start with. And I fell in love with it a lot, but I wouldn't necessarily endorse university with my children at all. It's a good thing for networking, and it's certainly a good thing for critical thinking. I found doing a high level with history, but as a stopgap, go travel or go work somewhere. You know, go work with Reid Hoffman. How imagine that?
Yeah, I want to talk very briefly, because I do need to let you go pretty quickly, about how you're building your personal brand in a huge way. I wanted to ask you this question. Every place I see, it's Richard Moore first, then maybe what you're doing, like Entrepreneur Business Live or something like that. It's always your name is above the title in Hollywood parlance.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your strategy for doing that way.
Actually, Houston, I'm really glad you brought this up. In 2015, I led momentarily with a brand, which was at the time a course I'd built called 8-Step Startup, which was 8 themes, 73 lessons, video, how to build a business. And I led with that. And it was like a footnote by Richard Moore. Big mistake. Because what happened was I was building a brand that I had to have Fly, otherwise, like, now what? By building a brand around myself, I am the hub and I take me with me forever. And so if I build a good personal brand, I can bolt new products to it. That's why in March last year, when I started on LinkedIn and said to myself, in 3 months' time in June, I will launch a Basics of LinkedIn course showing how I've learned what I've learned this far. I was able to get really good traction because I said, hey, everyone that knows me, here's a product I've bolted on. And they were like, cool, let's jump on it, because I was a known quantity. So the other thing, it goes back to that point I made a bit earlier, is that all the people you will ever work with, who will consume your content, who may buy from you or who will endorse you in some way, they've all been heavily conditioned in the last 3 to 4 years that if you look at company brands, it's misfiring. I spend probably a third of my time with corporates showing them how to get the content game correct on, say, LinkedIn, for instance. How many times have you seen a post with, check out our latest article, and there's no face, there's a logo, and it's like, who am I speaking to here? It's 2019, and the reality is that consumers and people, when they consume content, in my opinion, they want it to be from an authentic, in the way we've described, person, because that mouthpiece represents not just value, because you can get value from a business, but it represents clarity, it represents human, and therefore it represents trust. And I think that is like being you in your purest form, it makes sense to people because there's just so much noise from people trying to gain you. So it makes sense to seek out those who are just getting on and being real. That's why your personal brand is everything. That's why it's your reputation. But that's why, importantly, it's a foundation from which you can launch very exciting things and quickly if you work on it. People simultaneously need patience. And the reason why I need patience is that, as I said to someone earlier today on the call, the game lasts forever. You know, don't worry that you haven't got a million Instagram followers. You'll get there, you know, little by little. But every day, you know, apply good stuff to your brand. And this is an acculturation process. You know, Instagram stories is a bit of a pain to start with because it's interrupting and disrupting your life. But it becomes how you work. You breathe in and out. You share with you. It's just how it is. And it's important. And what's also lovely is that at the same time, you're bringing a community that's ever growing with you on your journey. And you really don't feel very alone. You have your offline friends, sure, and your family. But you also have this body of people. Because you can tap into everyone, billions of people, you have those that are fanatics for your space and in and of that are fanatics for you, cheering you on as you go. And what a wonderful way to do things.
That's exactly right. And as you say, it's even more important now to build your personal brand because the days of having one job for 30 years, retire, and you're done is gone. Yeah. It's just gone. Yeah. You know, sociologists are saying you're going to have anywhere between 10 and 15, maybe even 20 different jobs throughout your life.
Yeah.
If you build your personal brand, you'll be able to get those additional jobs because you're building understanding about who you are, what you do, and how you do it. You are proving by demonstration, through demonstration, that you can do this, that you are a specialist in it or an expert in it, and therefore valuable. And most of all, if you're doing things like podcasting, video, live streaming, you're showing people how you talk, what you look like, how you think, the way you listen.
Yes.
So the need for a job interview is almost secondary because they already know you because of the body of work you've created.
Which is such a hack because job interviews are a joke. It's a joke. The best interview you'll get without what we've just discussed is probation of 3 months actually doing the job. But an interview, it's never going to do as well. And I think you're absolutely right. And in a short year that I've been on, say, LinkedIn, if I was to now post, guys, I'm on the market, or words to the effect, I'm on the market now, I'm interested in employing me, like, that's the way to do it. I'd get, because you get so many opportunities as it is. And you're right, you know, people get to know you. That's why, for instance, the New York event, where of 41 attendees, I think like 35 knew each other. That's why people walk in and they hug you. You know, they're not like, oh, hello, nice to meet you, how are you? It's not this informal thing. It's building a community and putting yourself out there a bit. And it's daunting, I get it. But what you got to, my last bit of advice, if you like, is that you, how you feel emotionally in the moment about sharing a bit of content or a video should be superseded by the need to acquire a certain outcome. So doing a video for the first time is scary, but at the same time, if you have value to give that will help improve someone's life, not least improve your business's standing, that's more important than how you feel in the moment. And that's kind of how I squared it with myself. It's the business needs this. So what audacity do I have to say, well, I won't do video because I feel a bit nervous, because my business needs it. And the business supports people, DP. There's a payroll and things like that. And that's just, that's bordering unethical. So that really helped me do it.
You are so right, Richard. And again, I'm talking with Richard Moore, the redheaded UK Richard Moore, M-O-O-R-E. What a great giver on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, his website, and more. Richard, where can people find you, or where's the best place online for people to find you?
I think if you drop me a line on Facebook, I always do my best to get through all these DMs as well. So look for richardmoore.official is after the URL, you'll find me there. Or LinkedIn, I'm kind of simultaneous with them. So Richard James Moore, yeah, redhead. I think I'm wearing a red shirt as well, just to reinforce the point in the profile pic.
Well, all you really need to do is, if you're confused, scroll down and see what the content is. If you see a ton of great giving content, that's Richard Moore, because seriously, the guy is legit. I just want to invite everybody again to the free Facebook group, Nonfiction Brandversity. All you have to do is ask to join and you are in. And I want to also ask podcast listeners to like, subscribe, refer, and most importantly, review. It can really help people discover the podcast if you can give us an honest review. I don't care if it's one star. Well, I kind of do. So why don't you make it 5 stars if you can? That said, Richard, again, do you want to invite anybody to join any of your properties online?
Yes, do join us. If you go to Facebook in the search bar and search for Entrepreneur Business Group, it's an amazing ecosystem. There are thousands of people in it, and it's not a rapid growth group. It's an organic growth one. So I don't advertise it other than like people just kind of join themselves. And the engagement is wonderful. The conversations are great. And every day people make connections and they collaborate and new opportunities are there. So if you're in the startup, entrepreneur, solopreneur space, and you want to be around like-minded people, I think it's a really great place. It's certainly far bigger than me.
Well, and the key to being around people like that is they are suffering, enjoying the same challenges you are. And there's no better place to get inspiration or fired up than by people who are doing the exact same thing as you are in different ways all over the world. So once again, I'm DP Knuten for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and he is
Richard Moore
of the UK and the red hair. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.